This is Ashley Stone, and you're listening to the Comeback Podcast. Scott and Melissa, this is our second interview with two people ever, and the last one was 2 weeks ago, so we are in for such a treat. So thank you guys so much for hopping on the podcast and sharing your story. You guys have an incredible video that's made about your story, and we'll link it so that people can watch it. But I'm really excited to have you guys on, and I also kind of have a cold, so if my voice is a little scratchier than usual, that is why. Yeah, let's go ahead and start. I'd love to hear some background about you guys, and then we can jump into your story.
Awesome. I grew up in Texas. My family are all members of the church on both sides, huge families, all active. I was one of six kids. Skip and fast forward to today. Melissa and I have been married for about 18 years. We have four kids. They're between the ages of 10 and 16. They all four act like teenagers, and we have two dogs, and we're in the kind of home building and home design world, and that's what we do professionally. And I guess I'll let you introduce yourself.
I'm Melissa. I did not grow up in the church. I just grew up with a Christian faith, but kind of did it on my own. My parents never went to church. I just decided to go by myself. And Scott and I met my freshman year of college, and he wasn't active at the time, and I was just doing my own thing at the time. And so we dated for 4 years, got married, and then it wasn't until maybe 10 years later that kind of our story started to happen.
Yeah. When I was a teenager, you know, Texas, not Utah, the wards, that we were in an inner city ward, there weren't a ton of youth. I think probably our entire youth program between young men and young women had maybe 15 people. So like when I was deacon age, I think maybe there was one other deacon, and we were totally opposite. I loved sports and hanging out, and he didn't. So I didn't really have any friends. That probably contributed to my like disinterest in the church. I'm pretty hard-headed and like stubborn, and I guess you could say I have a rebellious spirit is what my parents might say. And my dad is like the opposite force. And so we butted heads a lot about a lot of things, especially as I got older. But I remember probably one of the battles was, you know, they would say things like, you have to spend the night at a member of the church's house three times before you could spend the night at one of your non-member friends' houses and stuff like that. And I just pushed back. And so we fought about a lot of those kinds of things. And as I got to like 13, 14, I was getting into things with my friends. I think I tried smoking cigarettes, and I was just kind of wandering away. And I think I was rebelling from my parents, and church probably was unintentionally a part of that rebellion. And so I remember my parents would always say, you have to go to church or you'll be grounded. And so I would go to sacrament meeting, and then I would leave and just like walk to like Subway or something and just sit and eat a sandwich and buy stuff on Sunday, and like totally the bad kid. I mean, I just was like, you can't make me go to church. Like I won't go. And I wouldn't go on family reunions. And I was just like, you can't make me do anything. I just became that kid. And they realized that they couldn't really. I could just leave. You know, they realized they can't force me to do things. And so I just got further and further and further away from the church. I didn't really have any doctrinal hesitations or objections to the church. It was just the way that people acted in the church. And I hope it's okay for me to say, but I feel like the church culture today is much, much different than the church culture was. Mm-hmm. I'm 44, so 30 years ago, it's just very different. And yeah, it was very much like this. We're going to be a perfect people, and like righteousness looks like this. There's only one haircut for boys. You know, you have to have a missionary haircut. And I just think that it was like more rules for me. I don't feel like I really ever got to know Jesus Christ. I just listened to like a little snippet from BYU talk. A woman was talking about how she taught seminary, and she had a girl that went inactive and came back like years later and told her that she was active and faithful in this Methodist church. And she was like, well, why? You know, what's interesting to you about that? And she said, because they talk about Jesus Christ like all the time. Like that's all they talk about. And I don't remember hearing about Jesus Christ very much at our church. And the seminary teacher was like, shattered my whole like viewpoint, and everything I wanted to do was different after that. And so I think there was some of that in the church, generally speaking, focus on Joseph Smith, focus on, you know, these other ancillary things that are really all just ancillary to Jesus Christ. And so, anyways, I don't feel like I really got to know him. I don't feel like I appreciated like who he is and what his qualities are and like what true religion actually is. It kind of was just felt like the Mosaic law, probably is like turn left 10 times and then hop on one foot twice and then you can take the sacrament. That just didn't work for me. I'm definitely like a but why type person, which all my kids are too. So I got into drugs. I mean, like my school friends were everything in my life. My family didn't accept me, you know, or that's the way I felt. They didn't accept the choices that I was making in my life, is a better way to say that. And so I couldn't share anything with them, like, you know, oh, this girl, or these sports things that I did when I was not going to Young Men, or, you know, whatever. Like, it just seemed like I was regularly met with disapproval. And so I just kind of lived in the sphere of my friend circle and got value from them. And so what they did, I did. And I was in and out of jail. Before I was 20, I tried probably most every drug out there. I just kind of was lost and wandered, and at one point was like seconds away from taking my life. And that's just like a whole other just amazing story about how Christ intersects in our life. Some girl texted me, or we had pagers back then, so she paged me. Some girl that I like liked at the minute, I called her and she's like, oh, we're at a party, you should come, a drinking party, you know. And I was like, okay, I'll just put this to the side and let's do that. And that just got me like 5 minutes down the road, right? To like change my perspective, which happens. And anyways, I had written my notes, like I was right there. And the Lord came and intersected in my life with a girl texting me to come to a drinking party. That's amazing to me.
It is amazing.
That shatters like the molds of that
It does.
I got into the bar business after high school. I kind of dropped out, took my GED, said I was going to go to college. I would manipulate my mom. You know, I knew what she wanted. And so I'd be like, oh, I really want to go to school, but I'm past high school. Like I should start college. It's like, oh, that sounds great, honey. I did that, but I didn't really go. Every semester I signed up, I dropped. I signed up, I dropped. I signed up, I dropped. I bartended, I drank, partied. I opened up some bars. A friend's dad wanted to open a bar. I didn't know anything about it. So he asked me to run it, gave me ownership, ran it. We were really successful, sold it, took the money that I made from that, and I opened up another bar. Anyways, these things were like huge achievements in my life. I was like really proud of myself for accomplishing these really difficult things. I did eventually end up graduating. Melissa and I graduated together at the same time. I never really had my family as a source of counsel or somebody who I could turn to and rejoice with my achievements. I'm really surprised I didn't end up dead or in prison. Like that's where I should have ended up. And so it's kind of a miracle that I didn't. I was bartending somewhere, and Melissa had started at SMU, a college right by where I worked. And so she had gotten a job as a hostess because she needed to earn income. And it was this forbidden love of the bartender and the hostess. And I was like, well, I'm 4 years older than you, so I'm too cool. But I couldn't resist her. And so we started dating. I was told, well, it's really funny because not our real first date, but like the first time we ever hung out, I took her to make a fake ID. That was the way our relationship started. We were just friends, but that was our first friend hangout. And our first date, though, was funny because she had a friend growing up. I'll let you tell about her.
Yeah, I just had a friend growing up that was a member of the church, and she was really the only person that I knew. Her family were really active, but they were not happy at all. And I saw that in them, and I saw that in her and all of the rules that she said she had to follow. And I would ask her, why? Why do you do that? She said, I don't know, because my parents make me. And so I just remember thinking, like, that church is terrible. I would never want to be a part of that church. And so it kind of started this wall against the church for me. And so when Scott and I went on our first couple of dates, I knew that his family were members of the church because they knew my friend's family actually from high school. And I said, just so you know, I'm never going to be Mormon. And he was like, great, me neither. And so from that
point, I haven't been to church for like 10 years. Yeah. So
from that point on, that was just a, you know, kind of an understood thing for us, is that we're not going to that church and we'll just move on and do whatever we want. So that was kind of the last time that we talked about it until maybe 6 years later.
Yeah, because Sunday we were day drinking, like Sunday fun day. We definitely weren't at church. We weren't talking about God. We weren't, you know, praying. We weren't doing anything. One thing that I noticed, though, and like Melissa said, she had a testimony of Jesus Christ. Just we naturally all have the light of Christ in us. It's there somewhere. But she definitely knew that she believed in God. I guess I just didn't think about it, but I did. And illustrated by, we had dated for about a year, and that was kind of longer than most girls that I had dated. And so I was like, is this just comfortable or is this real? And I don't know why, but I was like, well, she hates this. She makes fun of me for this. But right after our 1 year anniversary, I was like, we should take a break. We should just take a break for 30 days and let's just kind of like not talk and not be together. And let's just see, like, is this real? Or is it just casual and comfortable and we'll totally not care that we're not talking? She makes fun of me because it was like the day after our 1 year anniversary. During that time, and I'm like drinking and smoking weed and like, I'm just not living any kind of lifestyle that would be traced back to God. I guess I was just so soul searching that I needed to know, and I couldn't figure it out on my own. And so I was like, I'm going to fast and I'm going to pray and I'm going to try to get an answer from God. And so for a week, I said, I'm not going to smoke. I'm not going to drink. I'm going to try not to work and be in that environment. And I'm just going to really try to live like wholesome, which I knew that from my childhood, right? Like, I knew that maybe that's what I should be doing, I guess. And so I talked to aunt and uncles who were members of the church. All the counsel that I sought was from people who I trusted, but they were all members of the church. And maybe just because I saw that they had happy marriages. So I fasted and I prayed and I prayed. And by the end of that week, like, you know, angels didn't come down. I didn't like have this amazing experience, but all the anxiety that I had was gone completely, like 100%. And for me at that time, that was as crystal clear as an angel coming down for me. And shame on me. Now I can start drinking again, you know?
Yep.
And I did. And so I just went right back to that lifestyle. We ended up getting married a few years later. Still weren't going to church or anything. We got pregnant with our first kid, and kids like really change us. It was when we got pregnant that I was like, we should sell this bar and we should like grow up, I guess, and do something else. And we were like, what do we do? I don't know. But we'll do something different because it's probably not right for me to be coming home like
at 3 a.m.
or 5 a.m. smelling like alcohol. You know, you've been up and down with the kid, and that's just, I don't want to be that dad. So we sold it, and we ended up starting this business, and I won't go into that. But with him, I think we probably like a year later or less had an actual conversation of like, we want our kid to know who God is. We don't want him to grow up not knowing who God is. I don't think they have this around the country, or they call it something different, but a Mother's Day Out program here is kind of like where a mom can take her kid to a church, like a local Christian church, and they have a ministry that you pay them something, but it's minimal, and you take your kid there from like 9 to 2. And so you can drop them off, and a mother can just have like some time to herself. So it's a great ministry. There's a lot of those here. And so we were doing that at a Baptist church. So we were like, well, maybe we should go there because I don't really know any other churches. Because we were at this church, and I'll let you tell a story about your baptism.
So we were going to the Baptist church, and we've been going there for a while. I was pretty pregnant with our second, and we've been going every Sunday. And there was one time that we went, and this had never happened before, where the pastor said,
we've been going there for probably like a year, maybe.
Yeah, for a while. But he said, for whatever reason, I feel like I should ask if there's anybody here that wants to be baptized, come up right now and I'll baptize you.
This is right in the middle of a sermon. Like, you know, in traditional evangelical Christian churches, it's like, pastor gets up and speaks, and then that's it. But a lot of these churches have fonts that are kind of on the stand, so to speak, so that people that are getting baptized, you're watching it in what would be like our sacrament meeting room.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I felt kind of ashamed about or didn't really talk about, but I had never been baptized, even though I had gone to some kind of Christian church for most of my life. And so everybody I knew had gotten baptized as a baby, and I just never was. And so I thought, like, I'm too old now. That's really weird. Once he said that, though, there was just something that pricked me, and I tried to deny it. I tried to push it away. I was like, I am really old. I'm pregnant. I don't have extra clothes. Like, this is a terrible idea. I don't want to walk up in front of everyone. And I sat there, and I just couldn't fight it anymore. And so I got up and was baptized that day. Another lady got baptized with me, and she said later, like, I never would have done it unless you had gone up there. Like, I didn't want to be by myself. And the pastor had said, you know, I've never done that before. I usually require people to do classes and, you know, to meet with me first. And I just felt like I should, for whatever reason. So that for me was the beginning of my conversion, I would say, just because we were trying more desperately to get to know him for our kids, for our family. That's something that was really special to me. But something that kind of put a damper on that is that a lot of family, they didn't understand why I would be baptized in another church. I called them and I said, oh, I just got baptized, expecting them to be so happy for me. And they said, oh, so what does that mean then? Like, just, you know, like, it's not the right place. So that put up another wall for me, because I thought, I'm trying to grow closer to God and Jesus Christ. And this is something that took a lot of courage for me and was a, you know, an outward expression of that faith. And mm-hmm. it's not even celebrated by you. So that was really difficult for me.
I love how that story illustrates just that was the Spirit, yeah. that was the Holy Ghost like working in her. And why would the Spirit work in her to go get baptized in an evangelical church, right? Like, it's not a binding for eternity baptism, but does that mean that it's meaningless? Like, it absolutely is not. It was a very personal moment for her and her Savior, and she did it for all the right reasons. And grew closer to him because of it.
I got to add one thing to that thought. I got sober 11 years ago at the Salvation Army Adult Rehabilitation Center. Part of the program, it's a Christian-based program, and part of the program is you go to chapel every Wednesday and Sunday, and it's Bible study. Being in that environment I felt the Spirit there. The Bible study, I was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that the Bible was so cool, you know? And like, I was in the praise band. I felt closer to God being there. And it was kind of the first little like experience I had going back to church. And I believe that he meets us where we're at. He shows up in other religions. He shows up for his people and his children. And obviously, like, this whole podcast is about coming back to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And that's where I find my true belief and a complete gospel testimony. But I have experienced that similarly, where I went to this other church. There was truth there, you know, like, do I believe that we have the fullness of the gospel in this church? Yes, I do. But I do believe that there was truth there, and I felt that.
Yeah. And I mean, and that segues perfectly to, we went to this church. We were like, oh, you know, that we're missing something. Like, we're missing mm-hmm. something. So we went to another church, it was another kind of evangelical Christian church. We went there for a while, maybe another 6 months or a year. And we were like, oh, we're missing something. And then there's this like mega church near us, non-denominational, like mega churches. I don't know if they have those in Utah, or they're getting bigger and bigger around the country. And I mean, they have like 10,000 mm-hmm. congregants, and they have services like all Saturday and Sunday, and this beautiful building, and they've got the band, and they've got totally different experience than what I grew up with. But we started going there, and I tell people 100%, that's where I went through my conversion. I went through my conversion in that church. And the pastor I connected with the messages that he was sharing, and he was challenging me. And you know, everybody, but I felt challenged, and we wanted to be better. And this is really where things got special was, this was in 2012. They must've had some challenge or, you know, reading challenge, but for Christmas, Melissa bought us both Bibles. I mean, I didn't even own one. I don't think she did either. Maybe a childhood one, but she bought us both Bibles, and they were ESV version Bibles. And it was this 15 minute a day reading challenge. You read the Bible 15 minutes a day, you can read it in 365 days. And so it's all plotted out. I'm kind of competitive. And so I was like, I'm going to do this. Like, and I'm not going to be the one that doesn't do it. Yeah, I'm not going to lose. So we started reading the Bible, and we would like kind of watch shows at night in bed. And then we'd like read together for 15 minutes. And I think I had never gotten through Genesis before ever. And I don't think I'd read much, if any, of the Book of Mormon. And the Bible is kind of like, there's a lot of parts of it that are, you know, like Leviticus and Numbers, and like you're reading all of it. So I just remember, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to like dredge through this, but I'm going to do it. So I was reading every day. And then eventually I think both of us just stopped, or like, whatever, like most goals, they fade. And so we stopped, and it was probably like August or September. And I was way behind, 3 or 4 months behind, but that competitive part of me, God used it for good. And I was like, I'm going to do this. But the only way I could do it at that point was like reading like an hour or 2 hours a day. And so I would wake up at like 5 in the morning and I would start reading the Bible.
And, to win, to beat me.
Yeah, but I was doing it, and I did it. I read every word. And it's so special, this part of my life, because I didn't know what was going on. I didn't recognize it. I look back now and it's all obvious. But at the time I was like, I didn't know why, like maybe it was a sermon, but I was like, I should probably stop cussing. Like I'm better than that. I cannot cuss. I would try to stop cussing. Maybe a month later, I was like, you know, maybe I should stop drinking. I drank more than I wanted to the other night. I should just stop drinking. So I like made it a goal to stop drinking, and I stopped. It's amazing. I remember where I was. It was at a Cowboys game. The last time I ever drank, so many years ago. And then I was like, I should stop doing these other things. Well, that I didn't feel guilty about before, but suddenly I started to feel guilty about. And I just started shedding all these things that I didn't know why I was doing that. I didn't know that it was the Spirit. And then also I was like, I should pray. But most of at that point probably couldn't say God out loud without like being like, oh.
I definitely could not pray out loud. It was so uncomfortable for me. Even to have he and I pray together was just really difficult for me.
But I was like, I'll pray. So my goal is I'll pray every day before I go to work. And so I would just say the Lord's Prayer. And I would just say the Lord's Prayer, and then I'd go. And then I don't know how much time went by, but then I was like, I should probably pray at night. So I'll say the Lord's Prayer at night too. So, you know, that's what a lot of Christians do. And then like just everything just started to change. And I was like, I wandered off and like said a real prayer, like where I was just talking to God. And then I started to feel the Spirit. And then I started to have these feelings, and I started to feel this connection to God. And by that point, I was probably reading the Bible every day for like 2 hours, and I was praying. I just felt this closeness with God that I had never felt before. And I hadn't stepped a foot into our church ever. I couldn't care less about our church. This was all happening just with me and Jesus. Like we were on this path together, and he came and he rescued me. He came and found me where I was, and he rescued me, and he showed me like what love is like. And I remember, I didn't know they were promptings, but I started to get promptings. Some of them were just draws. I was like, I'm gonna go read the Bible at the temple. Like in my mind, I still had no inclination to going back to the church, zero. But why did that make sense to me? I don't know. But I went to the temple and just parked in the parking lot, and then just read my Bible at 5 in the morning. And there was one morning when I was just reading the Bible in the temple parking lot, and I had words in my mind that I knew weren't mine. It just said, you need to go to the temple. And I was like, God, I hear you, but like, what other churches have temples? Because that's not the one. Like, I'm sitting in the parking lot, but this isn't the one that I want to go to. But I was like, message received. And then it probably took some time. Then I think I started to feel promptings that I should open the Book of Mormon. And so this was kind of all in secret because I knew that Melissa wouldn't approve or that it would upset her. So I was reading the Book of Mormon. And then at some point, this just really strong witness came that I needed to go, that that was the church that I needed to be going to. I remember we were in St. Thomas on vacation. By this point, I had developed this habit that what I do is I wake up every morning and I read the scriptures for a long time. Like, this is working. I'm changing into a way better person. I'm kinder to my children. I'm kinder to my wife. I'm more honest. I'm just this man that I honestly didn't think I could ever be. I didn't think I was a good person. And I was like, there's actually some traces of a good person. Like, I see the fruit of what's happening and I want this. And so I kept doing it. And so I had woke up early and I was like out by the beach reading, and I got like this really strong prompting that I didn't want, which was, you need to tell Melissa. And I was like, no, please, please no. And it just wouldn't stop. So I think I texted her like this really long text. I think she just responded and she said, like,
he just said, I'm sorry. I have to tell you something. I didn't want to do this. This was not planned out, but I feel like I really need to join the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. My answer was something like, I don't know how to receive this. And I just felt so betrayed. Like, I had said from the very beginning, I am not going to be a member of this church. And, you know, as we were going through our journey of trying to find the right church, every now and then he would say, well, what about the LDS church? And I would say, no. And then, you know, we go to a couple others. And so he just kept bringing it up every now and then. And I just kept saying no. And that just happened, you know, throughout our marriage. And so when he texted me that, I was betrayed, but also like, you tricked me. Like, this was your plan all along. You've been slowly trying to, you know, insert this church when I've said over and over, I didn't want to do it. And I just thought, you know, I don't know how this is going to work. And now we have four kids. I can't just do something different with my life. You know, this is affecting me too. I was really angry for a long time. I finally agreed though. He begged me, like, please just try to figure out,
well,
if
really,
this is for you.
Because the tension was just growing so much. And I would go to church with her and the kids at the church that we were going to. And then I would go to our church by myself.
Well, I just grew really resentful because it was taking a lot of his time. And I was at home with the kids and he was gone doing home teaching and he was gone for 4 hours on Sunday. And he was...
Church was still 3 hours back then.
At one point he came to us and we had this ritual where every Sunday we would go to church and we would go out to lunch with our kids. And then one day he came to me and he said, so I don't think I can go to lunch with you guys anymore. And then our kids were saying, why doesn't Dad want to go to lunch with us anymore? And I just was exploding on the inside and got to the point where he said, hey, please for me, like, will you just pray to see if this is true? And if you don't feel like it is, I'll never ask you again. I was still really reluctant. Like, at that point, I still couldn't even open the Book of Mormon. It was so hard for me. And
I hated Joseph Smith.
Hated it. And I, you know, there's all the walls that I had built, but also the resentment, you know, for him, which part of that was the church because it was taking him from me. And I tried really hard it took me over a year, I think, to read the Book of Mormon. And it was a little bit at a time. As I was reading it, I would just say, like, well, I guess that could be true. Like, that's fine. And so then I would keep reading. I was like, well, I mean, that's like something good, I guess you could say. So I guess that's fine. And I made it all the way to the end and I felt nothing. And I had been praying to know, is this true, while I was reading it. And, you know, I had the pressure to find out if it was true because things were escalating with us. He, at that point, was like, I called him my personal pastor because all he talked about was God all day long. And so it's like, did you read your scriptures today? Every conversation was about God. And I was just like, just stop. Like, you're overwhelming me. And so that would kind of stop my progression, but I was stubborn. I was really upset. And I talked to a lot of people. We had one of our really good friends right now. She was really the only person that I knew that was a member of the church that I really liked. She was a client of ours. We had built a house for them, or remodeled a house for them. And I called her and I went over to her house and I said, I am just having such a hard time because I've read the whole Book of Mormon. I have prayed about it and I feel nothing. Like, how can that be? She was really supportive and really kind, but I still left there without having any answers to that. So it just got to a point where I was just really sad that I could not get an answer. And I just thought, like, I'm doing all the right things. I am trying. I don't know why I'm not getting an answer. And, you know, Scott would try and say, well, just lean on my testimony, you know, until you can have your own. And I was just stubborn. And I said, no, like, I am going to know for myself. I'm never joining this church unless I feel it myself. Like, I'm not doing this for you.
All the while, I'm like on my knees, like, God, what is happening? You know, like, she read the Book of Mormon. Like, help me out, please. This is our marriage. I mean, the adversary is just trying to tear us apart so hard. And days were hard. I didn't know if we were going to make it.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like an internal struggle. Like, I could feel kind of some light and some goodness, and then something would happen and it would just pull me right back to the resentment.
Like, my dad would say, like, why do you work?
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to work. She's like, because I want to work.
Yeah. I was like, I've always worked. I want to work. And so it wasn't until our oldest son was about to turn 8. And Scott came home and said, so I have been talking to the bishop about Caden getting baptized. And that just set me off because I was like, he's my son too. Don't I get a say? Why is he getting baptized in your church versus my church? It just got to the point where I was like, I can't be in this house anymore. I need to go by myself over the weekend. I need to think. I need to pray. And so I went and I got a hotel room, and it was at that point where I just felt like I was at my very lowest. My marriage is terrible. I feel awful. I'm mad all the time. I don't know what to do. And so I think it was when I was rock bottom that I really had to ask, like, okay, God, like, if it's true, I really need to know, because I can't do this balance anymore. Like, I just have to know. And I spent all night kind of listening to conference talks and reading the Book of Mormon. And by the end of the night, I felt like, okay, I can be baptized. I don't know everything, but I think I can do it. So the very next day, I called the bishop, or I went to see the bishop, and I said, okay, I'm ready to be baptized. And he said, well, you can't really do that yet. And I was like, no, I've already read the whole Book of Mormon. I know everything there is to know about the church from Scott's family. It's been, you know, 10 years, however long it had been. And he said, no, you can't. You need to meet with the missionaries. And at that point, I didn't have a very good view of the missionaries. So I had gone to church with Scott
for about a year.
About a year. Yeah, we were still going to church before I felt like I should be baptized. But the elders that were in our ward at that time, I just didn't feel like I could connect with. They just didn't have a great spirit about them.
They both got sent home.
Mm-hmm. And so I said, no, I'm not meeting with the elders. And he said, well, how about you meet with the sisters from a neighboring ward for the first, you know, couple of times, and then, but eventually you will have to meet with them. And I said, okay, that's fine. So I ended up setting a time to meet with the sisters a couple of weeks later. And the day before I met them, they got transferred into our ward, and they were my missionaries before I ever started meeting with them.
Because the elders got sent home.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so the first time I met the sisters, I was not real nice. Being in Scott's family, he has, you know, hundreds of members of the church on both sides, and there's tons of missionaries, and I would read their missionary letters. I felt like all they talked about was, oh, I baptized this person today. And so I just told him, like, I'm not going to be a number for you. Like, I'm getting baptized for me.
Yeah.
I already know everything. You can't really tell me. I'm just doing this as a formality. And they're so sweet. They didn't get upset by anything that I said. They were just super loving. After that first meeting, you know,
tender mercies that one of them totally reminded Melissa in every way of, like, her best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, her personality, the way she looked. And so it was like this immediate, like, action. Comfortability.
Yeah. And they just seem like normal girls, you know, like somebody that was similar to me. I mean, they're much younger than me, but I felt like, oh,
you're cool.
Yeah. And they were, you know, pretty, and their hair was done. I mean, I don't know. I just felt like I'd fit in with them. They were just really patient with me, and I grew to really love them and got to the point where I had done all the lessons, but I still had a little bit of hesitation about getting baptized. And so there was one day when I was walking around the lake and just listening to scriptures or general conference or something, and I just felt in my mind the phrase, "Come as you are." And I knew that that was God talking to me. And I felt like, you know, I didn't need to know everything. I had enough of a testimony to move forward, and that I would learn everything else I needed to know at a later point. But at that point, that's all I needed to know. And that helped me to feel more comfortable continuing on that journey. But I still didn't know when I wanted to get baptized. I didn't know if that was, you know, next week, if that was in a year. Scott and I went to general conference in person that year. I guess it was a spring session. I loved going to conference that first time because there were so many people there.
So many different types of people. Like,
yeah.
You can go there and you can see, like, oh, there's every type of person mm-hmm. in the church, just like there is in the world. And I can totally be me and be in this church.
Yeah. And they all seemed happy and had like a, you know, light about them. Like I just felt really comfortable being there. And it was on Sunday, the Sunday session, we're already in the conference center and we're just listening to music and the spoken word. And I was praying and I just felt like I should be baptized with my son. So I told Scott, I think I want to be baptized. You still didn't have the Melchizedek priesthood at that time, but I made a plan to be baptized the same weekend as my son. But I didn't want to do it same day. I was like, I'll do it. You know, he can go on Saturday. I'll do on Sunday. And I said, but I mean, I was so stubborn. But I was like, but I'm not going to do it in the church. He can't make me. And so we had some property with a lake on it. And I said, I want to do it at the lake. So it turned out that Scott was kind of progressing in his journey, and he ended up getting the Melchizedek priesthood the weekend that my son and
I. Yeah, but like the super, you know how it is. Like you look back and you see God, like how he navigated and worked your life, and you see like the beauty and you see like how delicately everything was balanced. And so our bishop was so awesome, and I had been meeting with him and he knew about Melissa, and like I fully expected him to be like, she needs to get baptized, you need to go to the temple. But he was like, no, slow down, Scott. But I was like, but I need to go to the temple. He's like, but slow down. Like, it's not more important than your marriage and your family. And so I think I was totally ready, probably a long time before that. But I think he had me wait to go to the temple. And because I had never got my endowments, I had never been to the temple other than like baptisms. But he had me wait. And I didn't know this at the time. I guess when you get the Melchizedek priesthood, you're supposed to be sustained in state conference. And so I had gotten interviewed in like February and like found worthy to receive the Melchizedek priesthood. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll probably get it like next week. And they're like, no, actually, you have to wait for state conference to be sustained. So guess when state conference was? It was the weekend before Melissa's baptism.
Wow.
Right? Like you can't plan that. Our oldest son's 8th birthday. It was just such a tender mercy to me when you step back and you're like, oh, you know what? God does. He's got this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knows what he's doing. Like, I can trust him. I can trust that although it didn't go exactly the way I thought it should go.
Definitely not as fast.
Yeah, definitely not as fast. It's even better than I thought. And so, I got the Melchizedek priesthood the day or two before our son was baptized, and I was able to confirm him. And then it was me and Melissa and my dad and our two boys who were 8 and 6, and the two sister missionaries that Melissa had worked with, and our bishop drove an hour and a half or two away to this totally undeveloped property, walked down to the lake. There was a deer like on the other side of the lake.
Gosh.
With this beautiful moment. And I think it was just a really special experience to be able to go there and to have her. She stayed in a hotel the night before out there so that she could just focus on Christ and the covenant that she was making, and that this was about her and him and nobody else, and had to be somebody there to baptize her. But beyond that, it was just her and him. And I think generally speaking, if you want to summarize, I mean, you and your husband are the same, and so many people on your podcast, the mountain that you have to get past, it's not just like a, hey, you're on the other side of the river, like cross this bridge and you'll be here. It's like, no, you have to walk back 100 miles and then walk over this giant mountain. And there's so many obstacles and the odds are so far against you. And what would drive anybody to do that if it wasn't authentic? And so, like for both of us, and I'm sure for you and your husband and so many people on this podcast, it's like you have to have a relationship with Jesus Christ first. It's him. He's the one that found you. He's the one that rescued you. And he's the one that has the grace and the strength to help you get through it. So Melissa always jokes that like I was her personal pastor during that time. I had this unique closeness with the Spirit that I thought everybody had. Then I would like talk to somebody and they'd be like, that's not the way I feel. That's not how I feel the Spirit. That's not how I receive revelation. I had this like really special closeness with the Lord for a couple of years. And I thought it was because I was special. In hindsight, looking back, like it was simply because I needed that much grace to be able to get our family over the mountain because we would have never made it otherwise. And so I told Melissa, I was like, really, all the joy that I got from that closeness with the Spirit wasn't even for me. It was for you. It was so that I could,
It was a lot of long suffering on his
so I
part.
could tolerate you yelling at me or whatever and be able to like show charity and not fight back and not make the matters worse for you, but just keep loving you and keep praying and fasting for you. And anyways, for me, that was just another one of those things where you're like, God can help you have the desire, but then he also can give you the strength to do it. And whatever
Yes.
it takes, if you need extra grace, like you'll get extra grace. And like the byproduct of that is you get to feel the Spirit probably a little bit stronger in your life for that period of time.
You talked earlier about how you had all of these things falling out of your life. They just were like naturally falling out of your life. And I had a similar experience with I'm doing this experiment. I'm going to get my temple recommend and I'm just going to see what happens. Like, I'm going to go do baptisms for the dead and just like see how I feel. And it is so incredible how the Savior's atonement is enabling. It will allow us to give up things that we didn't know we had the power to give up. Like, why is coffee so hard to quit? It's so incredible how, like, the things that have no place in our life anymore, they just kind of fall out of our life. We have this power beyond our own to give up things that are not serving us anymore. And it's so beautiful to hear your story of how you had like an added measure, like you had the Savior's enabling power to do something beyond your own capacity during that time. And it's such a beautiful illustration of that.
What I love also, though, is that he never expected for us to go from like A to Z, like to be this person and then to be this person. Like he would just lovingly chisel just a little bit. Hey, I just don't give up. Don't change everything. Just maybe work on not cussing first, right? Like, and then maybe let's work on this thing. I mean, it's been 12 or 15 years, whatever, since 2013, I guess 11 years. But I'm still not there, right? Like, there's still so many parts of me. I'm like, I wish I wasn't like that. Like, I wish I could be better, like, in this way. And he's still, like, still working on me. How wonderful of a God is that?
I love that so much. So, Melissa, after you got baptized, I mean, tell us what that was like your experience. I know that like culturally that was a challenge for you with Scott's family and you had some experiences when you were younger that kind of just like Tell us about, getting involved in your ward. How did you respond to that after growing up with such a distaste for the culture?
I think at that point I felt pretty confident in my decision. It had taken however long, a year or longer. And so I just kind of jumped right in. I do remember for me, I didn't feel any huge change. Scott would say, like, oh, how does it feel to have the Holy Ghost? Because I got the Holy Ghost when I was 8. And so he's like, how does it feel? It's like, I don't feel any different. Scott said, I see so many changes in you. And I would notice little things like afterwards, I used to harbor grudges for a long time. And I would notice like, oh, I don't really harbor grudges anymore. And it was much easier for me to kind of let things go. And I learned if I, you know, was feeling a certain way that I didn't want to feel, if I was angry, if I was, you know, upset or sad, that I could pray and I could feel totally different. And so it was really a fun time for me, especially because, you know, I had Scott to kind of guide me through that. And this is what the Spirit feels like. You know, you don't notice it, but these are the things that have changed about you. And he was, you know, very vocal about receiving revelation. And, you know, everything that he did was by revelation. And so
not buying canned beans at the grocery store. But I did learn through that time because I needed to, like, how to receive revelation. I was like, this is like a superpower. This is like a really neat gift. How did I not know about this?
Yeah. And so that was exciting for me because he, you know, is receiving revelation for our family. And I was like, this is great. God just tells me exactly what I need to do. Through that time, though, I had to learn how to receive revelation for myself and not rely on Scott, because there was a lot of times where we were asked to do a lot of really hard things right after I was baptized, things that I didn't want to do. And he would say, hey, I mean, he would come to me all the time and say, hey, I got this prompting that we need to do this or that. And so it got to the point where I was like, I'm not doing that unless I know for sure that's what God wants me to do. And so then I would have to pray about it and see if I could get the same answer. And that brought me a lot of comfort, because it's like, if you're getting that answer and I'm getting that answer, then it's definitely the way to go. And I was really surprised, though, when I would talk to other women in the church, they would say, oh, we're trying to decide if we're going to move. And I'd say, have you prayed about it? Like, have you received revelation? And they're like, no. And so I just realized that there weren't a lot of women that tried to receive revelation on their own. And that was really surprising to me, because Scott was always encouraging me to get the answer for myself. He didn't want me to just lean on him. And so it was a frustrating, you know, journey, or like a difficult journey, trying to learn for myself, like, what does the Spirit feel like? How do I hear the Spirit? It was a journey, but I just felt like that's something that I had then for myself that nobody could take away. If I had something hard that I needed to do or that I was going through, I could pray about it and receive revelation for myself. I didn't have to rely on anybody. And that was something just so empowering to me. And so anytime I would talk to, you know, other women in the church, I would say, oh, you should pray about it. Like, you can know for yourself. You don't have to rely on, you know, just your husband or
the priesthood.
It was really fun for me. You know, I just jumped right into the church. Scott was ward mission leader for one of his callings when I was first baptized in the first year or so. And so,
which I love, because I never served a mission. So it's like, so cool to me. I worked with the missionaries like all the time.
Well, and we had sister missionaries. And so they were at our house all the time. And I was going out teaching with them. I loved it. It was great. You know, when I look back on it, a lot of people say, like, why do you think you didn't get an answer for so long, even though you were trying? And when I look back, I just realize I was asking, but I didn't really want to know. You know, it was like, please tell me if this is true, but I kind of hope it's not, because I don't want to give up coffee and I don't want to wear different clothes. And at the time, the LDS church wasn't looked on in a good light in our neighborhood. There was a mega church around us that was saying that Mormons weren't Christians. And so I felt kind of ashamed at first. Like, I don't want anybody to know that I'm a member. There was only one other family in our entire elementary school where our kids went that was a member of the church. So we were very outnumbered. So I was like, I don't want to be weird. I don't want my kids to be outcast. And so it wasn't until I was really asking with, you know, a pure intent of like, I have just got to know. And I'll do whatever you say is true. You know, like I'm all in, you know, whatever you say, I will do it. And that's when I got that answer. You know, I look back and sometimes I would be sad that my journey was so difficult, you know, cause I hear people say like, oh, I opened the Book of Mormon and it was like, you know, and magical feeling. And I knew right away. And, you know, then there's people like, oh, it's like a sunrise and it, you know, gradually happened. I was like, mine didn't happen so long ago, but I felt like mine had to be that way, because if it wasn't so difficult, I wouldn't treasure it later. And so because of the things that I've gone through and because it was so hard for me, I fought tooth and nail for that testimony.
Yeah.
And so now there's no way anybody could ever change my mind. And I needed that. And so that's something that I know will benefit me for the rest of my life, was having to go through that really hard trial. But I made it.
I love that.
God can do anything. You know, it's something where I said, I will never do this. You know, I couldn't even imagine at that point where we would be at this point.
One of the hard things that we were asked to do was to move. And we loved where we were. We lived right by a lake and we had a big lot and we loved our house. And so that was one of the hard things Melissa mentioned. You know, like we felt like, but there'll be more blessings there. So we were like, okay, we'll go. Our new ward that we live in now is just so amazing. And the people in our ward now, there is no culture and tradition. Everybody just has these like awesome, like when they get up for testimony meeting, it's not like, I do family home evening every Monday. And I've been struggling to do family home evening. And it's like, this is me. I am broken. I am trying, but I am so imperfect. It's been so good for us. It's been another like evidence of when you do what the Lord asks you to do, no matter how hard it is, there will be more blessings because he's only asking you to do it so that he can bless you. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're both all in. Like you and your husband, right? Like when you've gone over that mountain, yeah, like you're changed.
Mm-hmm.
And you're following somebody. You're not just going to church.
Yep.
Well, and I'll say too that, you know, a year after I was baptized, we went to the temple and were sealed as a family. And Scott waited to get his endowment for a year until I could go with him, and we got our endowment together. And then the next day we were sealed.
Super cool though. We went to the temple every week. Like we put it on our calendar. It's like Thursdays at 7 or 8 a.m. We drop our kids off and then we go to the temple and do baptisms like every week, no matter what. Like some days you'd be like really angry or in a fight and you'd be like, I don't want to go to the temple, but we'll go. And then you'd walk in and you'd be like, what was I angry about?
Isn't it always like that? Like before you go to the temple, there's always something that happens or something that comes up.
Mm-hmm. But we grew like a huge love for the temple. So then after we were endowed, I became an ordinance worker for about almost 7 years, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah, but I'm super grateful for, you know, the opportunity that we had to get sealed with our kids. You know, they were young at that time, but there's something very special about being at a physical altar with your children and making that covenant.
It's special for us.
Like. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And so I loved having that experience as well. And would it have been better if our kids were just born in the covenant? Sure. But God ended up making it something that was, you know, beautiful for us.
Because of our weaknesses, right? Like
my stubbornness.
Yeah.
He works like, all things to the good of those who love him.
Yeah.
I love that so much. One of the things you said earlier, Scott, was God's got this. He's got this. He knows the bigger picture. And it's so incredible to see how, you know, things that might seem really hard or challenging in the moment, looking back, it's like, oh, that was a piece to this puzzle, but, you know, I need for this big picture. And I love that. He's got this. He's got our backs. You guys are so incredible. Like your testimony and just how you showed up at your baptism, Melissa, like how you're like, I am doing this. Like I am going to get a hotel room and I am taking this seriously. It's just so amazing. And I'm so impressed with both of you. So thank you so much for taking the time to share your stories on the podcast. You guys are amazing. I'm so excited to share this episode. I am better for having heard your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Likewise. We're so grateful for you and what you've done. Like I said, the stories on your podcast paint a picture of who Jesus Christ is that not much else can. I mean, he's so big and nobody is too far. You're not too far gone. There's nothing that you've done in your life. Like he's big enough.
Mm-hmm. I love
to that. Rescue you.
Yes, he is. I love that. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey guys, first off, I want to give you a heartfelt thank you to all of you that support the podcast. We wouldn't be able to get this message out without all of your help, so thank you so much. I've had a few questions come in from people that aren't on social media, so I just wanted to let you guys know that we do have a website. It's www.comebackpodcast.org. You can find all of our episodes here. There's a list of our book club selections, and you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Thanks again. We love you guys so much. A lot of people have asked us how they can support the podcast, and we have created a Comeback Podcast merch line on our website, www.comebackpodcast.org. All of the money made from the merch goes right back into the podcast. So if you are interested in supporting the podcast, and you want to purchase some merch, we would love it. Check it out.